following is a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCAST.com.
Welcome to the Alien Invasion number 204, a Galactic Network podcast. I'm the returned Dave Nelson. It's been a few weeks.
And a few imposters. Well, two imposters, I suppose.
You guys
Me
did,
and Gregor.
You guys did a great job the last few episodes, I have to say.
Well, thank you.
You're very kind.
No, don't sell yourself short. You guys did a great job. You know what? In fact, there were times where I thought it was more entertaining with me not on the show and just you guys running things.
What?
My wonderful sense of awkwardness. It really comes out.
That's your shtick, maybe. That's your thing. Go, you know, harness that and use that from now on, Anessa.
Woohoo!
Everything that you do. Just be the awkward person.
Awesome. Thank you, Dave.
You're welcome.
I'm awkward.
All right. So thanks to Mucky Warhol for providing our intro music. It's a song called Alien Syndrome. You can find it at soundcloud.com/Mucky Warhol. And this is the show where we talk about beings from elsewhere in the universe and their appearances in film, TV, video games, comic books, science, real life, and other areas that you'll just have to listen to find out or watch to find out where they may appear. Who knows? There could be an alien behind you right now. Look, there he is.
What? Oh, my God.
Oh, right. That's just Alton Brown.
That freaking guy.
Yeah, he's pretty much an alien. All right, so I don't have this in the document, but I have our weekly question. You guys ready for this?
Okay.
Since the holidays coming up, since Christmas is just around the corner, I wanted to ask you guys, is Santa Claus an alien?
Yes.
Because he does things that mere mortal humans cannot accomplish.
He has a bag of holding. Well, he has a bag that's made out of Time Lord technology because it's bigger on the inside.
Obviously.
So maybe he is a Time Lord or like traded with the Time Lord.
That could be.
I mean, he's a master of time and space because he can travel, he can traverse the world in one night.
Exactly. I'm saying Santa Claus is a Time Lord.
Okay.
And he's been around for like hundreds of years. Just saying.
Wouldn't that be awesome? You know how Doctor Who does their Christmas specials? Wouldn't that be awesome if that was the actual plot to an upcoming, like, a future Christmas episode, that he actually is a Time Lord?
And there was a glitch, and, like, the chameleon circuit actually kicked back in for, like, a day, and it was stuck on a sleigh.
Yeah, that would be awesome. So, the producers of Moffat, are you listening? Stephen Moffat, right? That's his name?
Yes, for now.
They call him Moff. He's the showrunner. I think we have gold here. You should take our idea and make an episode in the future. And we want a little cut, please.
And thank you.
All right.
In the news,
Roswell. Okay. So, reports of seeing aliens, missing time, and memories of being abducted in the New Mexico town have been reported to UFO investigators. Bum, bum, bum.
Whoa, what? The aliens have returned to Roswell?
Apparently they've been visiting Roswell for a while.
Oh.
So the U.S.-based Mutual UFO Network, or MUFON, has received reports from people who claim the bizarre events happened to them in the town. Roswell has been at the heart of the UFO scene since July 1947, when the military sensationally announced in a press release it had found the remains of a crashed flying saucer in the desert nearby. But the following day, it retracted the statement, saying it was in fact a damaged U.S. Air Force air balloon. Witnesses later came forward to say there had been alien bodies within the crashed craft, with which along with wreckage were taken away. So one bizarre case was reported to MUFON as happening on August 8th of last year at 8.09 p.m. So August 8th, 2015. The anonymous witness said objects were found in the back of a work colleague's head after the alleged strange event. The report said, "This event caused a very serious altercation between my colleagues and myself. The abduction of, name removed by MUFON, lasted approximately 2 hours, of which he cannot remember. After a trip to the local hospital, several small objects were found in the back of his head. No other evidence was provided to corroborate the alleged discovery at the unnamed hospital. However, a photograph of an alleged UFO was provided." Another report concerned allegations from February 18, 2014 at midnight. The report in this case said, "Subject's son, while staying in a trailer park, saw two gray entities. One was short and one was very tall. He can't remember what happened after that. Subject's son has had nightmares about being abducted and is frightful of the experience so much that he can't sleep at night." One detailed report sent to MUFON relates to events on March 1st, 1969 at 8 p.m. It described how a family of five were driving from Lovington to Roswell to visit relatives. The report author said they were with their parents and two brothers. "At about an hour into the drive, I noticed a bright object to the right of the car and mentioned it. Immediately, this object was directly above the car. At the same time, the radio went to static, and we heard the speedometer cable break, and it actually felt like the hair on my head was standing up. There was no sound, but there was light everywhere. The object above was so large that I could see it from the back seat as I looked straight ahead. I had never been so terrified in my life, and I just froze where I was. My middle brother was climbing between the front and the back seats, and my youngest brother was only three, so he didn't seem to react. The scariest part to me was that I saw a huge black eye staring directly at me from the window beside me. They said the shape of the eye was a translucent black teardrop shape." The report added, "The next time I remembered anything, our car was heading towards a ditch alongside the road. Dad quickly turned the steering wheel and kept the car on the road. We were all so terrified that all of us were completely silent. We soon pulled into our grandparents' driveway to see the frantic looks on their faces. The report claimed there had been a loss of time as a result of the happening." It added, "My grandfather said, 'What happened? I was just about to call the state police to look for you.' My grandfather asked what took us so long. A 1.5 hour trip took 3 hours. I don't remember almost anything of what was said, but I remember feeling the terror that gripped us." The author was 54 when the report was made in 2007, while the brothers were 51 and 44. The parents were in their 70s. The report added, "I have had several nightmares throughout the years, although they have lessened with time. I am very afraid of being abducted, and my heart races every time I think about it. I have told a few people about this event, but probably no more than 20. Strangely, almost everyone seems to believe me. I would like to know what happened, but at the same time, I am too terrified to know anymore. The account bears many similarities to other accounts of missing time after a static feeling an apparent UFO hovered above and stopped a car. MUFON, the world's largest organization dedicated to UFO and alien research, has received many similar reports from across the globe." And this is coming from the express.co.uk.
Anessa, don't you mean MUFON?
MUFON.
MUFON.
MUFON. MUFON.
Oh, MUFON. Okay.
Don't question the molder.
I was just trying to turn it around like we normally do, because you usually say MUFON. I said, don't you mean MUFON?
I know. But I'm changing it up. I'm pulling the Mulder card.
Damn it. Damn you. Deny me the opportunity to say MUFON.
I'm sorry, Dave.
It's okay.
Don't you mean MUFON?
Yes. So, so what do you think's going on here? Do you think the aliens have never left the Roswell area? Do you think they've just been hanging out there since 1947?
Well, I'm kind of wondering if they initially went during that time. They're like, hey, this looks like a nice place in the middle of nowhere. Let's check it out. And then they had technical difficulties and crashed.
Oh, okay.
But they had sent a report back home, which piqued interest from their other co-workers, cohorts?
Their co-workers.
Compatriots?
Yeah,
Marge and HR.
Their family. And so anyway, I think they're like, well, we should probably wait a little bit for things to calm down, but we'll be back. And so I think they eventually decided to go back and continue their studying of people in Roswell, New Mexico.
This happened August of last year?
The first story happened August of last year. They also talked about another story that happened in 2014. And the last one was reported in 2007, but happened in 1969.
Wow.
When the writer was a child.
Sounds like it's just been happening nonstop. I think they definitely have not left the Roswell area, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think they've been sticking around, and they might even be participating in the big UFO celebration each year.
What?
You wouldn't know it, because they'd be...
You don't know who's under that mask.
Yeah. I may have already met a UFO or an alien when I was there.
See, there you go.
Yeah. If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com. Or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966. 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Follow this Galactic Network podcast on Twitter, like our Facebook page, or subscribe to our YouTube channel. Find us by searching for Galactic Network on all the major social networks or click on the icons at gncast.com.
The date that we're recording this episode is the night, well, the early showings have already started, but tomorrow is the official release date for Rogue One, A Star Wars Story. So thanks to Brad, he gave me this story. We get to be a little timely, a little topical to coincide with the release of the big Star Wars movie. So one of if you're going to the film or have seen the film, you may have noticed this. One of the planets in Rogue One was directly inspired by Ridley Scott's Alien. You may be asking yourself.
Dun, dun, dun.
You may be asking yourself in what way? Well, I'm about to tell you. So shut up.
Okay.
Director Gareth Edwards told Fandango that he tried to include little nods to The Thin Red Line, Blade Runner, THX 1138, and other films. I can understand The Thin Red Line because Rogue One is supposedly very much a war movie, and The Thin Red Line is a classic war film. Blade Runner, I'm not quite sure why, but THX 1138, that was Lucas's first?
That was Lucas's first film, sci-fi film.
Yeah. But he mentioned that if audiences paid close attention, they would very plainly see his tribute to Ridley Scott. In the film, there's a planet called Adu, which looks like it's been ripped out of Alien. The planet was also included in some of the trailers for the film, so you may have already seen it. So I will describe it to you, and you can tell me whether you remember seeing it in the trailer. Edu looks very similar to LV-426, the planetoid in Scott's original 1979 Alien, where the alien pods are discovered, and the setting for James Cameron's 1986 sequel Aliens, which I thought those were two separate places. Am I am I right or wrong? The planet in the original Alien, 1979, is that a different place than the planet that they that what's her face goes to in Aliens?
I haven't seen Prometheus yet.
No. Sure.
No, he's talking about like
the
Alien and then Aliens.
LV-426.
First couple movies.
The original planet that they go to in the original Alien film, is that the same or not the same as the planet that Ripley ends up in Aliens?
I think it's the same one.
Okay. I didn't know that. I thought it was different places. Okay.
I thought it same, isn't it?
I thought so too.
Okay. Well, I was wrong. There you go. So this article, I don't know if you guys want to click on it, so you can kind of join in the conversation here, but they show a comparison between LV-426 and this Edu planet. And Brad, let me know if you're going to look at that so you can, because you're really good at describing things. You do the whole what you're showing on your video thing all the time, and you're very good at it.
Oh, I'm going to pull up the article here real quick.
This is cool.
Okay. So, I don't think that we can share screens with BeLive, unfortunately, but the overall look, it has a very, it's a very blue and dark palette to the looks of both of these planets. They are very rocky with very, you know, rocky spires protruding from the planet's surface and very, very dark and foreboding in its look.
And kind of like either misty or foggy or smoky.
Yeah. Yep. The kind of a medium visibility. Very, very hazy look to the planet. I think to give it the illusion that, or at least the feel that the atmosphere is probably not breathable by human beings. Yes, you have your hand raised.
I do. So Carrie on Facebook says Alien and Aliens was indeed on LV-426 and Prometheus was on LV-223.
Okay.
And so it's the same planet for Alien and Aliens. Also, referring back to the previous story, MUFON is a sticky rice dish over where he is.
Oh, interesting.
I believe that's Growly Bear.
Yeah.
Is it Growly Bear?
It is Growly.
I don't know his actual name.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So hi, Growly Bear. I learned something new today. Okay, continue.
Were you talking, Brad? Or was I talking?
Yes.
You Brad were talking. Was talking.
Okay.
I'm done talking, so
okay.
You're up.
Okay.
Somebody's talking.
It's a very subtle nod to LV-426. It's not obvious, but it's cool that he did that. You know, and I'm glad that he let us know that it is a nod to LV-426, because I don't think anybody would have really picked up on that. So Edwards isn't the first to include a tribute to the planet either. The desert planet in Mass Effect is also called LV-426. That's a pretty obvious homage or ripoff. Why would you do that? Why would you name? Because it's a pretty well known moniker. It's a pretty well known name. LV-426. People know what that is. So why would you include that? Why would you name your own planet and your own video game that?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I have no idea.
Okay. Huh. All right. So are you guys going to see Rogue One soon?
It will be after Christmas, probably beginning of January before we get to see it, because Anessa's traveling home.
Yep, I knew that.
For Christmas. So.
Yep.
I'm flying south for the winter week.
Just like a bird. You're a bird, Anessa.
She is like a bird. She's going to fly away.
I don't know where my home is. Sorry.
If you would like to chat with the hosts or other listeners of this Galactic Network podcast 24 hours a day, go to gncast.com/signup. We'll add you to our Slack team, so you'll have the ability to interact with us in real time. Again, go to gncast.com/signup. sign up.
Find cosmic blast shields. Find the aliens.
Ooh.
This is a very interesting story that comes from the Atlantic. And when you think about it, after I talk about this, you go, oh, it's so simple. It's brilliant. Astronomers say that they could detect signs of advanced civilizations by searching for their defense mechanisms. For decades, the search for intelligent extraterrestrial life has used giant radio telescopes on the ground to scan the skies, hoping to detect alien broadcasts from somewhere in the Milky Way. So what can astronomers look for? The most popular suggestions are structures built by civilizations far more advanced than our own. In 1960, Freeman Dyson hypothesized spheres or swarms constructed to harness and harvest the energy of a parent star. Now, in 2005, Luke Arnold proposed artificial objects inserted into a planet's orbit to serve as a signal of existence to other civilizations. Now, a pair of astronomers suggest looking for shields constructed to protect against deadly cosmic explosions. The two astronomers, Milan Cirkovic and Branislav Vukotic, suggest in a report published this month in the journal Acta Astronica, Astronautica.
You're doing a great job, Brad.
Acta Astronautica. I'm moving on. That advanced civilizations could lasso objects within their solar system to engineer shields that would dampen the dangerous effects of exploding stars or gamma ray bursts. Back on Earth, telescopes like Kepler could spot these shields as they transit their stars, creating the dimming effect the spacecraft is built to observe. Powerful infrared telescopes could also detect the shields by the heat they emit. We could certainly look for these, as well as all conceivable forms of astroengineering within the SETI framework, Cirkovic wrote in an email referring to the search for extraterrestrial intelligence by its acronym. The orthodox SETI is narrowly conceived and unlikely to succeed as long as it relies on international radio emissions. Advanced humans, Cirkovic and Vukotic write, could shoot electron beams into a part of the solar system with plenty of icy objects like the Kuiper Belt, creating electromagnetic fields that would push enough objects together to form an Earth-sized disk around the planet. The disk, they say, could block the worst of a cosmic blast and save the planet. The report's authors argue that advanced humans could also predict some of the cosmic catastrophes from which they seek protection. Weather forecasting is far from perfect, but humans have managed to predict the strength and trajectory of some hurricane and other storm systems, the astronomers say. Years from now, advanced gravitational wave detectors could observe collisions of merging neutron stars, meetings that produce dangerous gamma ray bursts. Astronomers could then check nearby stars for potential protective shields. So simple, it's brilliant.
Shields up. Red alert.
Exactly. So I remember seeing a documentary where they talked about how it's amazing how we've managed to keep life on this planet for as long as we have. Because things like gamma ray bursts could just scrub the planet clean in a matter of seconds. If it's a powerful enough blast. So the logic behind this is pretty sound, actually. Mm-hmm. If you have achieved that level of scientific and engineering knowledge, why wouldn't you put up protection from things that could happen like that, that you're probably not going to have a whole lot of time to construct those defenses. So why not have them up right away?
So we can thank the Van Allen belt, right? For protecting us from radiation and that kind of stuff.
Yes.
But it won't protect us from like asteroids and like hard objects.
But like they're talking about two neutron stars colliding and emitting a gamma ray burst. That wouldn't protect us.
Well, maybe this is something that we should as I just was listening to myself about to say something totally stupid. Like we can't even agree on like protecting the planet from climate change. Not to mention something as big as this, but maybe sometime in the future when we get our crap together and we realize that there's all these threats out in space, maybe this is something that we can build to protect our planet.
If we live that long, sure.
Yeah. All right. Interesting. No, that's very interesting. I never even thought of that. Like, it's almost the Dyson sphere, but not really. It's like
exactly.
It's a half Dyson sphere.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, its whole purpose is just to harvest energy.
Yeah.
Not really offer protection. Okay. So.
Yeah. So it's kind of like the Dyson sphere, but not really.
Yeah. I mean, it's from what. Well, the only like practical one. Practical is a very loose term, but the Next Generation episode where we get to see Scotty. I mean, it had its own gravitational system, and I'm trying to remember. Did it have like terraforming on the inside?
Yeah, it did. It did. Oh. Yeah, they like walked on the on the inside without needing to be inside. I think it was just like being on a planet, but on the inside of the sphere, sort of.
Okay, yeah. So, I mean, what would have to be a dense material? I don't know. There's so much speculation here, and none of us are engineers or physicists. So, I mean,
not even close.
We could chit chat about it all day and not get anywhere. But like I said, it's so simple, it's brilliant. It's so hard to be able to hear radio signals, and they wouldn't be potentially, depending on the distance, they wouldn't be all that intelligible. So why wouldn't you look for superstructures like this, defenses?
Yeah.
Just, that seems like common sense. Once you lay it out there, it's like, oh, well, of course you'd look for that. Duh.
So Growly Bear says something that siphons energy from its parent is called a kid.
If you have thoughts, feelings, or a strong opinion on the story that we just talked about, email aliens@gncasts.com. That's aliens@gncasts.com, or call our voicemail number. Area code 805-328-3966, 805-328-3966. Thank you for your feedback.
Please identify the craft you witnessed.
Black, triangular, three-dimensional shape, huge, just flying, hovering in it.
Shaped like almost like between an egg and like a teardrop.
Two long cylinder objects flying over me.
We had a dome. I could see the occupants in it.
It appeared to be rotating, and it was almost circular to disc shape, and it hovered for maybe about 5 minutes.
I was listening to the episode last week that I was not on, but Gregor was here, and he did a fantastic job. You guys were talking about a sighting over Liverpool. And today in my research, I found another one. Another sighting near Liverpool.
What?
And this one is pretty recent. And after reading this, at the very end of the article, they mentioned how Liverpool is a magnet for UFO sightings. There's been a lot. Not just recently, but you know, over the history, over the last 20 years or so. So let's learn about this. Liverpool residents were left stunned after seeing a pair of UFOs hovering above their skies. And it doesn't say when this was, but I think it's pretty recently. A mobile phone video shows the mystery craft traveling parallel to one another. It was captured on a Saturday afternoon at around 4 p.m. in Halewood. There's no explanation yet as to what was recorded on video by Enchanted Life Path TV, Alternative News and Media. That's weird how they just stuck that in there. I think they had to say that. You can post the video. You can talk about the video as long as you give us credit.
Yeah, pretty much.
That's a long name, too. Jesus. Enchanted Life Path TV, Alternative News and Media.
But it's easier to say than what Brad had to say last week.
What did you say last week? I forgot.
I forget. It was like Mundo something.
Oh,
something.
Yeah.
Like Yeah.
Better you than...
It was in Spanish.
Better you than me, Brad. You did a lot better than I would have.
I like popped in and said the name and then he would continue.
Yep. The level of butchery that I was perpetrating on that name was it was awful.
Again, it could have been worse.
It could have been.
Yeah. That's very true.
The videographer said he saw the object while looking out the window, and this is kind of funny. He first thought of it as a balloon, but he saw another one next to it, then appeared to him they were flying in tandem. He then jumped out of the window. I'm like, what?
Whee!
Seemed kind of random, just jumping out of the window.
Was the door too far away?
I don't know. I have no idea. Hopefully it wasn't, he wasn't like, it was either a ground floor window or...
I'm going to assume it was a ground floor window.
Yeah. So he jumped
onto like a balcony or something.
He jumped out of the window with his camera to get the footage. Video experts who investigated the footage could not determine the two UFOs. That's worded weirdly. Initially, they thought they were drones, but changed their mind. One YouTube commenter said they are not drones, but two UFOs caught on video. Of course, you believe every single comment.
Well, yeah.
I think they were flying horses, to tell you the truth. So I must be right, because I'm a YouTube commenter. Flying horses.
Pegasi?
Liverpool became a UFO hotspot after it was reported recently that there are more supernatural sightings, police reports, in Merseyside than any other areas in the UK. So there you go. That's the thing I was referring to at the beginning, at the top of the sightings. So we'll have to keep an eye. We'll have to keep an eye out on Liverpool. You know what it is? It's those damn Beatles. They're the ones attracting all these UFOs.
That's got to be it.
No, think about it. They hear, you know how our radio signals travel into space? Maybe one of the Beatles songs got to a planet somewhere out there, and they're like, oh, we got to find the home of that music. That music is brilliant. We have to go there. And they're just like, they're big fans, that's all.
Yeah.
Boy, they're going to be sad.
I was going to say, they're a little late to the party.
Half of them are gone now.
Oh.
Please subscribe to this Galactic Network podcast by going gncast.com/subscribe or search iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play Music, or anywhere podcasts are offered.
Let's move on to picks and warnings. Picks and warnings. Do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do-do. Okay, I'll stop. Sorry.
I like our theme song.
Anessa. Yeah, I hopefully we won't get taken down. We won't get a DMCA. DMCA? DM Digital Rights Digital Millennium DMAC. No? Help me out.
Brad would know.
Just the copyright infringement notice.
Copyright
cease
infringement.
And desist.
That's a lot easier.
Yeah.
All right. Anessa, go ahead. What's your pick or warning?
My pick is a short story written by Philip K. Dick called The Crystal Crypt. And it's at a point to where there are Martians on Mars and Earth is referred to as Terra. And some of the Earthlings Terrans end up going to Mars to live, visit, tourist, do business, trade, whatever. And at some point, there's a lot of tension building up between the two planets. And there's thoughts that it could eventually break out into a war. And the Terrans that are there on Mars have decided to evacuate in case something does go down. And on the last vessel you have, like, heading back to Earth, or Terra rather, you've got the last of the Terrans that were there on Mars. And the vessel ends up getting pulled over onto, not Phobos, Deimos. To a little airstrip there on Deimos. So soldiers can board the ship and look to try to find three Terrans that have destroyed a city on Mars. And essentially you're reading the story and you're finding out, like, what exactly happened and how it happened. I'm not going to say anymore because I don't want to spoil anything. But I did enjoy it. It was a quick read. It is available on the Project Gutenberg as a download, or you can go to Amazon.com and download it for free on your Kindle or iPad with the app, or any device that has the Kindle app, you can download it to for free. So if you have maybe 10, 15 minutes of your day to waste, I would recommend it. I enjoyed it. I've not really read a whole lot of Philip K. Dick, so I can't say, like, oh, this is, like, terrible compared to his other works. But I did enjoy it, so there you go.
Could you tell he was
the Crystal Crypt?
Could you tell he was on the drugs when he wrote it?
It was pretty coherent and fluid. I think, I don't know. I couldn't really tell that he was on the drugs at the time. Or he could have been, that could have been the whole point of the story, just one big trip. So
I don't know if he was, I don't know if he was as much of a drug user as he was. I think he had some mental issues.
He was self-medicating because he was a paranoid schizophrenic.
That's it. I knew it was something like that. Okay. Thanks for clearing that up. Brad,
you are welcome.
Brad, you're a smart man.
Well, I don't know about that. I just have a whole lot of crap in my head.
So, yeah, boop. There you go.
All right. We'll check it out on Project Gutenberg. Gutenberg.
Gutenberg.
On the Gutenberg.
And for folks that don't know, Project Gutenberg is wonderful. There's thousands of books that are no longer copywritten that people have volunteered to type into a text format, and they're available in different formats, so you can download and put it on your devices. So there's some really great classics out there that you don't have to pay for to read. Highly recommended. Gutenberg.org.
You mean Project Gutenberg?
Yes.
Gutenberg.org.
All right. Okay. Oh, how many flying saucers you give that bad boy?
3.5.
All right. That's respectable.
100.
100.
100,000.
100. I'm getting Gutenberg. 100. I'm turning into Letterman. All right. So my pick is a short film because I had absolutely no time to put anything together for Alien Invasion this week. In fact, Brad got my story. I was lucky enough to find the sighting really quick, and this is, like, one of the first things I found on YouTube. But it was worth it because it's probably one of the best alien-related short films that I've seen in a long time. It's called Invasion Day, and I think it was somebody's student project, but you wouldn't know it from looking at it. It's, like, high-quality Hollywood stuff, man. It's basically this huge ship hovering over Paris, and it's like sucking in stuff. I've never seen this on a depiction of an alien craft. It was like a vortex in the bottom, like you would see, like, on The Flash, on that the the Invasion crossover, how, you know, Supergirl gets to our Earth and vice versa. It was kind of like that, like the Stargate vortex. Sure. But it was sucking everything up. It was like almost feeding off our planet, you know, eating everything that it saw. So it was a big ship, big mothership over Paris, sucking things up. And then there's a couple of like jet fighters come in shooting at it, but you see their bullets, you know, being deflected because of course it's got like a force field up, because every self-respecting alien mothership has a force field.
Duh.
Yeah. And then, okay, there's humanity on the ground. They're freaking out. You can hear them. They're yelling. Because, of course, there's a huge alien ship above your city. Why wouldn't you be freaking out, right? And then there's a very interesting twist at the end. I'm not going to say what it is, because it really blew my mind. It was a really interesting, clever, neat twist at the end. And I'm going to just let you guys watch the short film. We'll put the link to it in the show notes. And tell us what you thought of it, because it put a big smile on my face. So check it out. It's Invasion Day, short film on YouTube. You can watch it for free. What do you guys?
Sorry. I was watching the video.
Okay. Oh, did you see at the very end? Did you see the very end? Okay.
That's awesome.
Yeah, I know. So I'm going to give
it.
I'm going to give it 5 out of 5 flying saucers. It was pretty awesome. I liked it a lot. All right, Brad, what's yours?
My pick was an episode of Star Trek, the animated series, which happens to be on Netflix.
Yes. I love the animated series.
It's the episode called More Trouble, More Tribbles. As a follow-up to the, I don't know if it was very popular, but it's as a cult classic show, it's one that people really enjoy. And it's, it was a Cyrano Jones, the gentleman who we met in the original series who, had the tribbles. Is on the run from the Klingons, and the Klingons are trying to destroy this ship because of this ecological terrorism that was done upon their Klingon, one of their Klingon worlds. And before the ship is destroyed, Scotty manages to pluck the inhabitant and some of the tribbles off of the ship. So the Klingons had actually developed a weapon that it almost looks like the effect for it looks like a sonic disruption, like a, what would be concentric rings that just shoot out from the ship. And when it hits a ship, as long as the field is activated or the gun is active, it will disrupt the ship's phasers and propulsion. And I won't give away how the Enterprise gets out of that, but they do. And we come to find out that Cyrano Jones's new scheme is that he figured out a way to make the Tribbles not reproduce.
Oh, brilliant.
When they but there is a side effect to this, which you discover later on. And he has also stolen a creature from the Klingons called a Glomper, which basically is a predator of the Tribble. So it has 4 legs and it like walks over the Tribble, basically sits down on it because its mouth is underneath it and consumes the Tribble.
Ew.
You don't get to see that part. It's like, oh, he's walking over to the top of the Tribble, and all of a sudden the camera like pans up to the to Kirk, Spock, and Scotty, and they go, oh, okay, well, that's effective, I guess. Wackiness ensues, and I don't want to give away the rest of it, but one of the things that I've always really appreciated about the show is they got the original actors back to do the voices. Even the gentleman, I need to confirm that, but I was pretty certain that the gentleman that played Cyrano Jones reprised his role to do the voice for the cartoon.
I know Doohan did a lot of voices. Like, he didn't just do Scotty. He did he was a really good voice actor. And I'm pretty sure he did more than just his voice in the animated series.
Yeah, I'm sure that he did too. I would give it, for the sake of nostalgia, I would give it a 4 out of 5. Filmation's animation work is not always the best, but it got the job done.
All right. So, 4 out of 5.
There you go.
That's
4 out of 5 flying saucers.
Respectable.
More Trouble, More Tribbles, the Star Trek, the animated series episode.
We had some high scores this week.
We did.
Good job, guys. You done good.
Absolutely.
All right. To review, Anessa had The Crystal Crypt, a short story by Philip K. Dick. I had Invasion Day, a short film. And Brad had More Trouble, More Tribbles from the Star Trek, the animated series on Netflix. Oh, since we're talking about Star Trek, what do you guys think of the Star Trek Discovery casting of the woman that plays, now I'm blanking on her character's name, in The Walking Dead, Sasha in The Walking Dead. She's going to be the lead, she's going to be number one in Star Trek Discovery. Now, Brad, put aside your bias against the series, because it's going to be on a separate streaming service. I know you don't like that, but set that aside. What do you think of that casting news?
Well, I think it's good that this will be their first African-American female captain.
Yeah.
Or lead of a show. So I think that's pretty cool. And from what I've seen of her work on The Walking Dead, I really enjoyed the character that she portrays, and I think that she will do a good job as one of the primary actors of the show.
We'll see in May when it premieres.
Hello, I'm Gregor Sprague, and this is the Else Nerds. Now, what are the Else Nerds? Well, it's myself and Corey Scott, along with our producers, Beatmaster and Evan Rockety, as we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little heart, whether it be comic books, movies, TV shows, video games, cell phones, the moments that we're walking down the street and a person says hi. It doesn't matter. We talk about everything, and you can find it at elsenerds.com.
Okay, that's going to do it for this episode of The Alien Invasion. Before we get out of here, final thoughts. Brad, you're first.
I've got nothing.
Doctor
Who, the Christmas episode is going to be in theaters. It's going to be in the Green Bay Theater December 29th.
Oh, I'll be back then.
At 7 p.m., check your local listings. But for those of you who want the full theater experience of a Doctor Who episode, that is making the tour. It will be in theaters around the United States. Well, actually, I'm pretty sure around the United States, my guess would be the continent of North America, either the 27th or the 29th, depending.
If you're listening in Canada, they're going to be shown at the Cineplex theaters, it looks like.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Skiniplex.
Skinimax. All right, okay. Anessa, what's your final thought?
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, this is your last episode before we won't see you until next year? Or are you going to be on the show before the end of the year?
I'll be on the show before the end of the year.
Okay.
Because I fly back on the 27th, so unless I get stuck or something. I'll be back on the 27th.
Yay.
So I'll be here for that week's show, just not next week.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas.
That makes sense. Merry Anesimus. Woo!
Yeah, happy birthday, too.
Keep Anessa in Anesimus. I can't talk anymore. I'm done.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. Have a great week. We'll talk to you next time.
Okay, bye.
Goodbye.
This has been a Galactic Network podcast. For more, go to gncast.com. That's GNCASTS.com.